speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's
back to the bin. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. It's been a long time, but it's time for a score episode. I'm here. I'm Paul Spataro, and I'm here with my good buddy Clark Kent. I mean, Dave Pascarella.
Howdy ho. Great Scott. Are we going to see strippers that you said a score episode?
Are we going to see strippers, Mr. Luthor? No, we're not going to see strippers. And as we had a text conversation yesterday, it's been so long since we did a score episode that I forgot what score stood for. And then eventually I did remember it's Shameless Obligatory Coattail Riding Episode, which does not really translate to S-C-O-R-E, but we take our liberties as we find them because we can do what we want. It's our show. So we're doing a score episode because we will soon be seeing, actually by the time this comes out, we may have already seen a new Superman movie.
Yes, I plan to see it on day one, at least one time.
Okay, I don't think I'm going to see it on day one, but I am very confident that I'm going to see it. In the theater, you know, as opposed to waiting for it to come available. What I've seen in the coming attractions looks solid to me. My biggest trepidation, and I don't know that anybody shares this with me, is I'm a little concerned if I'm accepting this actor as Superman.
Oh, I have less. I don't have any problem with him.
That seems to be the popular thought. I think I may be the only one who has this, that I'm looking at him and I'm thinking he doesn't look like Christopher Reeve. But for whatever reason, I accepted Henry Cavill very quickly.
Well, as we've explained in the past, I love Christopher Reeve. He's great. But George Reeves is my Superman.
Same for me. I'm certainly not sitting here telling you that I'm going to dislike this guy as Superman. I mean, what I've seen in the coming attractions look fine. And I expect that I'm going to, but for whatever reason, casting as Superman is more important to me than most properties that get developed this film.
Because he's so iconic. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to. So we're going to see.
I just hope they didn't throw in too many ancillary characters. That's my concern.
Well, there are, we're going to have Mr. Terrific. We're going to have Hawk Girl. We're going to have, you know, basically we're going to have the Justice Society effectively. And we're going to have, what is it? Is Brainiac the villain in this one? That's what it seems.
To me, it seems that way. But, you know, you never know. It looks like it could be also Bizarro. But they're calling him Ultraman.
It's going to be interesting. And, I guess this episode is probably going to air, probably going to air after the movie comes out, so we shouldn't do too much speculation because we're going to look foolish on what we're wrong about. So let's just jump into our books. I picked Superman number 171. Now, this background on this, I remember this cover from, I think this is probably the first superhero comic book I ever read. Wow. I remember this from when I was very, very young. I think I was at my cousin's house, you know, my older cousins, and they had the issue, and I was reading it from there. We'll see if that's the case or not. Or I won't know if that's the case or not, actually, because nobody's going to confirm or deny that for me. But I remember reading it when I was probably 6 years old, something like that, and being very, very engrossed by it. I didn't really remember details of the story, but the cover stood out to me very much. And I recently picked this up at Kyle's Comics, which is my go-to comic store for back issues. And I believe I paid $5 for it. So
this is one of those rare times where I actually have the same book in my collection, but I paid significantly more than $5 for it.
Well, that's because you didn't go to Kyle's Comics.
I did not.
New York. I'm giving Kyle a commercial for anybody who's in the New York area who's listening.
Don't get screwed like I did. Go to Kyle's Comics.
Yeah. Kyle's a good guy, and the store is perfect for back issues. If you're looking for current stuff, he doesn't have the new weekly releases or any of that stuff, but he has dollar bins that have, you know, recent things in them. But the store is basically all bins. So if you're a back issue person, it's perfect. And he's always willing to bargain with you, you know, a little bit on the price. You know, he comes right off the bat, you know, like whatever the marked price is. Well, but if you buy five of them, I give you five more free or whatever, you know, like that kind of thing. So it ends up being half price if you do it right. Anyway, this particular issue, Superman number 171, came out in August of 1974, or the cover date is August of 1964, excuse me. I'm sorry. There are three stories in it. But the one I remembered, even, you know, peripherally, is the cover story. So that's the one we're covering. And surprisingly, the cover is the story is actually the third story in the issue. Usually the cover story is first. But the cover is by Kurt Swan, and it shows Superman in a fist fight with a caveman, taking a punch to the jaw as cave people look on. The twist is that Superman is wearing the animal skin while the caveman is wearing Superman's costume. The story in question is titled The Nightmare Ordeal of Superman. It's written by Edmond Hamilton, who I'm not familiar with, and it's illustrated by Al Plastino. The splash page shows a scene similar to the cover, and Superman is thinking, "I was the strongest man in the world on Earth, but on this planet, I'm the weakest." How did we get to this? Let's look back to the lab of a great astronomer, Dr. Loring, who we've never seen before and will never see again. He notes that a distant sun is emitting strange radiation and that he'd like to study it. His colleague suggests that they ask Space Flight Center officials if they can make use of the very plot-convenient new super-speed missile. The problem, however, is that the missile won't be ready for days or weeks, and that might be too late. Lois suggests that if it's a yellow sun, Superman can take the recording instruments to one of its planets. Personally, I don't like when people volunteer me to do small chores around the house, so if I was Superman, I'd be really annoyed at Lois for volunteering me to travel to another planet.
Oh, anyway, what else did he have to do? What else could he possibly have to do?
Yeah, you just fly to another planet in another solar system, obviously, and who knows how far he has to go. But, you know, Lois and Jimmy,
you swing by, you drop the thing off, no big deal, you come back.
It's like just going to the dry cleaners as far as Lois is concerned. So, Lois and Jimmy ask Clark to take the message to Superman, and he complies with the request. And so Superman flies to this planet and sets up the recording equipment. But the sun then shifts from yellow to red, causing Superman to lose his powers. He rewires the equipment and sends a Morse code message to Earth, and they plan to use this super convenient super speed missile to rescue him. While awaiting rescue, Superman looks for food and shelter and realizes that the planet is inhabited. But while he's taking this all in, a caveman comes up behind him and clubs him. While Superman is unconscious, the caveman decides to take Superman's costume, which is better than his animal skin. Superman wakes up and dons the animal skin, because we don't need a naked Superman walking around. He then confronts the savage chief, who lifts him in the air and easily tosses him, where another caveman gives him a punch to the gut for good measure. And so Superman must make do and find shelter from a dust storm. He finds a cave and starts a fire, digs a well, and finds berries to eat. While he does these things, he thinks about how easy it would have been if he had his powers. He's fascinated with the fact that his beard is growing, and we're told that his hair and nails do not grow on Earth because he's under a yellow sun, which makes no sense at all, but what can you do? And I'm pretty sure that they did not continue with that in the Superman lore, because I always thought he used his heat vision to cut his hair and stuff, but whatever.
I don't know. That might be post-crisis, to be blunt.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either.
He starts to lose it and forgets that he doesn't have his powers and thinks that he'll need to take off his glasses so that they won't know he's Clark Kent. You know, since the fact that days have gone by with Clark missing wouldn't give them a clue. Days later, Lois, Jimmy, and the professor arrive on the planet despite their lack of astronaut training. They find Superman in his cave, and the fact that his hair and beard have grown serve to conceal his secret identity, and Jimmy muscles up and goes to recover Superman's costume. In a convoluted piece of logic, somehow Jimmy gets the cave people to think that because he has red hair, he comes from the red sun. They bow before him and return the costume that Jimmy gives back to Superman, who, while he was going on, found an intergalactic barbershop for a shave and a haircut. All that done, it's time for them to return to Earth. So, this is a truly silly Silver Age story.
They cut out the part where they're going to sacrifice Jimmy and Lois in a dinner. No, Clark and Lois in a dinner for Jimmy Olsen, the god.
Yeah, they should have put Clark and Lois on a spit and started to season them like as if it was a Bugs Bunny cartoon or in a big pot of boiling water. But, you know, when I read this at whatever, approximately 6 years old, I thought this was like such a deep and fascinating story. I think I probably read it 3 or 4 times. I don't actually remember the details from reading it then, but I do remember reading it. And I do remember thinking, yeah, this is so cool. And so in many ways, this may have been my entry drug into superhero comics, even though I always credit the Spider-Man 131, because that was the one that clicked that made me decide I was collecting comics. But otherwise, you know, this is silly, but it's still good fun.
Yeah, it's a fun story.
There's so many leaps in logic and common sense that you really have to just kind of turn your brain off and go. But again, at like 6 years old, I'm sure that wasn't a problem.
It seems like at this time there was a lot of these, Superman, we need you to go on a mission for us to drop the X-Factor off on planet Y and come back. You know, never mind what might be going on Earth that we might need you to save lives.
Well, you know, this was like a typical done-in-one Silver Age story. We get, you know, the professor he's doing the favor for, who we never saw before and we'll never see again. We get Lois and Jimmy and this professor acting as astronauts in this very convenient, super speed thing. That nobody questions the fact that, you know, however long he's gone, Clark is not available. Even though they do mention, you know, that Lois suspects that Clark is Superman. So why wouldn't she use this as kind of her evidence of the same, you know?
Right.
It's just, you know, it's got that Bob Haney feel to it. You know, of just, you know, just have fun and don't worry about it.
Yeah, somehow I doubt in the 60s you were going to get your hands on a rocket like that and just borrow it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, keep in mind, this is before we landed on the moon, even.
Significantly before.
Yeah, so, and they're just traveling to other planets now, you know, in other solar systems, because it's super speed.
Yeah.
So if it's super speed, then you can do it.
I like how the sun turns red and it's like flipping a switch that he goes from Superman to now he's just a regular guy. It's no like he runs out of whatever it is. It's just like, that's it.
I think that may be a post-crisis thing where they started saying that, you know, he stores the power, you know, that he absorbs from
Could
the
be,
sun
yeah.
and that it slowly dissipates. Because I don't remember seeing that in any of the stories pre-crisis. Now, again, I could be wrong about this. I don't have, you know, the encyclopedia that tells me exactly when this was first, you know, set up for Superman, but I don't remember ever hearing it before.
Well, actually, the Kryptonians lived on a planet with much stronger gravity. That's why they were originally able to leap, and they were so much stronger. So the colors of the sun should have had not so much effect on that aspect.
Well, I think that was in the 40s and into the 50s. Yeah. But I think at some point in the 50s, and I don't know when it was, but I think at some point in the 50s, they established the yellow sun theory.
Scott and I have to do the origin show and get back to that and cover the Silver Age origin, since we beat the living daylights out of the Golden Age one.
Yeah, I would enjoy that very much if you guys would get together and do that. See when you could schedule that. And then, you know, I think I really like the cover.
Oh, the cover's great.
But, you know, the interior, and I mean, it's not that I don't like the interior art. I like the interior art. But while the cover stands out as exceptional for its era, the interior art strikes me as typical for its era.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I actually thought this was a completely different storyline when you initially sent me the file. I thought it was this like a 3-issue ongoing storyline with Lex Luthor, where he gets Superman to Lexor and he's beaten on him for 3 issues under the Red Sun. I didn't realize there was another Red Sun story.
I vaguely remember that story that you're talking about, but I couldn't tell you when it was presented, whether it's before or after this. But I do, like I said, I do have a vague recollection of it. I think Scott may have discussed that on an episode. But this one, again, this one, the true memory burn for this one, for me, is the cover. I remember this cover for years and years and years. There are two issues of Superman, or two Superman-related issues, that I had memory burn, and I think it's for the same reason. I think I was at my cousin's house, and they had these comics, and while my mother was visiting with her sister, I was sitting reading comic books. But there's this one, and then there's an issue of Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane, that we covered way, way back on the show. And it's got, you know, the Pietà picture of Superman holding Lois Lane, I think, in a wedding gown on the cover. And, you know, again, it's a memory burn of the cover more than the story.
She's dead, Lois?
She was dead. She was dead. I think she was dead on about half the covers of that, that series.
Does he turn to Jimmy and go, "She's dead, Jim"?
I wish he did. That would be cool.
So, I get a kick out of how the rocket ship is reminiscent of the colors of the rocket ship he came to Earth in from, you know, that time period.
And I'm just thinking about it. You know, we mentioned that the, you know, that this predates, you know, the real ability to travel in space to another, you know, to another actual orbit of something. I mean,
they orbited
the Earth, but they hadn't actually gotten to another, you know, celestial body of any sort. You know, it wasn't until 69 that they landed on the moon. So, at this point, I still think, you know, the science fiction thoughts of the time were, hey, we could do anything once we can get to outer space. Yeah. So, you know, we can go to another solar system on this super speed rocket, no problem at all. And I think that's an acceptable theory if you're presenting it to your typical 6-year-old or even 6 to 12-year-old, I would say. But once you start getting beyond that, it's like, well, that doesn't really make sense, and I gotta kind of just brush past that in order to accept this story.
But it's also, you know, it's like Star Trek, how every planet has a breathable atmosphere.
And they eventually, I think it was on The Next Generation, where they had a storyline that that there were, I mean, and this is a common science fiction trope, but that there were some sort of beings that seeded these planets, and they had
Right.
seeded Earth as well. So that's why there was a similar evolutionary process.
Right, the preservers.
Yeah. So, I mean, at least they tried to explain it away eventually after whatever 30 years.
Then they found out preservatives were bad for you and that no more. I love how one of these primitive women looks like Wilma Flintstone.
Yeah.
It would have been
And it's
better if the guy next to her had skin and a blue tie on.
and I know it's something you need to do, so I mean I'm not questioning that, but I think it's funny how, you know, the men all have the, you know, the
Like a bowl
skins that
cut.
cover their waist, and the women all have, you know, their tops covered and all, which kind of goes against the whole Jack Kirby Commandee flower never wears a anything on a top.
Well, that's the crossover I guess we need. This planet with commanding.
Well, I think if it was something they did more recent, they probably would consider doing that.
I like how Clark really kind of loses his marbles very quick. It actually gives me some concern.
Yeah,
Like
he
he
quickly
completely
feels.
loses it.
Yeah, he starts punching brick walls. He thinks he could fly, but then he's got a fever. So, and who knows? You know, when you try to put realistic elements into things, who knows how much they're exposed to that shouldn't be coming back to Earth without some sort of a you know. Where they're cleaned and checked for any spores or diseases or whatever that they're bringing back with them.
Right, because they quarantined the astronauts when they came back from the moon.
Yeah, as well they should have. But again, that's putting a realistic bent on things that just will not have a realistic bent. So, I don't know, anything else about this one that stood out to you?
No, it was a lot of fun to read. You know, it's a simple story from a simple time, but it's enjoyable.
Yeah, this kind of fits what I've described about some Golden Age and early Silver Age, or certainly DC Silver Age books. The Marvel Silver Age I can tolerate much longer, but the Golden Age and then the DC Silver Age, I can enjoy them very much in small doses. But I can't do like a real reading project with any of them because if I'm reading issue after issue, it starts to wear me down a little bit as far as, you know, I can only live on nostalgia and looking at it from the point of view of a young person for so many issues before I start thinking I need something that's going to actually, you know, make my brain work a little better.
Yeah, I was doing that read through of all the Golden Age books from Action Comics number one. Actually, before Detective number one I started with, and I made it through 1942, and I had to rotate out and cut it down because it became too much for me. It's the same with this. You got to rotate other things in.
I'm also a fan of continuity. So when, you know, these stories that are like one and done and there's no ramifications ever for the future and no thought back to that it ever occurred or anything like that, I only have so much patience for them. I want stories that are going to be, you know, where there's a continuing storyline going on.
So
It
you
doesn't
would
have
have
to
liked
be.
if he returned to this planet and Wilma was pregnant, and there was a
Yeah.
question, was it his?
Yeah, because while he had that fever, he thought it was Lois, and
Right.
he took advantage.
Next thing you know, a rock piano is being thrown across a room.
And yeah, I could go off on
And
and on about
Barney's
that
there playing the happy anniversary song.
one. It's 88 Fingers Clark. So I'm going to rate this one. I love this cover. I think it's so cool. Again, to me, this is one that I could see even putting in a frame and hanging up. I think this is an A cover. I don't know if it's an A plus, but it's definitely an A. The interior art, again, I think it's kind of typical for the time. I don't think it's exceptional, but I don't think it's bad at all. So I'm going to give it a B. I think it's good. The story is dumb fun with a lot of holes in the plot. It's definitely got that Bob Haney feel to it. So I'm going to also give it a B. It's fun. As stupid as it is, it's fun. And I'm going to give the book a B plus because it's buoyed by the cover.
Yes, I'm pretty much right there with you. I love the cover too. It's a scene right out of the book, which bonus points for me. I like the way Superman's drawn. The caveman in his outfit, if you're young enough at the time, you're like, wow, what's going on here? I like Betty, Wilma in the background with the screwy Fred. So, and it's all under a red sun. So I gave the cover an A as well. The interior art, I think it's good for the time. I enjoy it. I guess it takes me back to those golden days of my childhood. So I gave the interior art a B plus. The story, it's weird. It's not, you know, something that you would come across today, but it's good old fashioned fun. And I gave it a B plus as well. So for me, this book is an A minus.
Yeah, we're right about the same place. Right. So now you went way, way in the future after my issue.
I did indeed. Yeah, let me just get back to where I got to be. Okay. Hang on one sec. Yes, I'm jumping us way ahead to the groovy 70s. In fact, we are just starting the year I would be born.
Woohoo.
I am bringing you the classic book that starts it all. The Kryptonite Nevermore saga, where we see on the cover Superman breaking the Kryptonite chains. That's an iconic poster image. And we are covering Superman 233. With a big number one on the cover, best-selling comic magazine to try and mislead you into thinking it's a first issue. But I digress. This is cover dated January 1971 with an on-sale date of November 5th, 1970 for a whopping 15 cents. The writer, the late, great Denny O'Neill, penciled by the late, great Kurt Swan. Inker, Murphy Anderson, editor, Julius Schwartz. This story proclaims on the splash page, beginning a return to greatness. That sounds like it's sending some shade at the book you just covered. I don't know about that. The splash page teases invulnerability, strength, speed, all these things and many more combine to make Superman the most powerful being on the earth. But there is another side to the Man of Steel, a dark side, hidden both from the crowds of admirers and the evil men who hate and fear him. At an isolated proving ground in the western United States, Superman patrols the sky above the facility where Professor Bolden, another guy we'll probably never hear from, is performing an experiment with his invention, a kryptonite engine. What could possibly go wrong with this? The engine creates a kryptonite chain reaction that, if successful, could supply cheap electricity for every undeveloped area. But if it goes wrong, it could prove deadly to Superman. Quickly, the engine goes out of control, but Superman is prepared with a lead-coated shield. As he approaches the seething, glowing kryptonite pile, there is an explosion that knocks the shield aside and blasts Superman with kryptonite right in the face. Superman drops like a stone into the sand and lies still for several minutes. Strangely, Superman appears unhurt, and stranger still, all kryptonite has apparently transformed into ordinary iron. Superman leaves to investigate how widespread the transformation is, leaving behind only his impression in the sand. Within hours, the Daily Planet announces the destruction of all kryptonite. Lois and Jimmy and Clark celebrate the end of the only threat, other than magic, to Superman. Morgan Edge, the owner of Galaxy Broadcasting and the Daily News, ponders the axiom of absolute power corrupting absolutely, and how it may apply to Superman. Edge quickly shifts gears and sends Clark to cover the launch of a transcontinental mail rocket. But strangely, as a television correspondent for WGBS-TV, while broadcasting live, Clark spots a suspicious character. Luckily, using the 3-minute commercial break, he makes a quick change to Superman and confronts the character, who gladly reveals a plot to steal the rocket en route and to sell its technology to a foreign government. The thug figures he'll just easily kill Superman after making this revelation, because he's armed with kryptonite. Clearly, this villain doesn't read the Daily Planet. Deliberately, Superman takes the kryptonite and eats it, remarking that it could use some salt. In a flash, Superman changes back to Clark and reports live on the launch. Then, using the smoke from the rocket's blast-off as cover, Superman is off to stop the aerial theft. Superman thinks to himself how there's nothing that can harm him, and that his power isn't corrupting, but it's freeing him to do unlimited good. Superman intercepts the two planes attempting to steal the rocket. He finds his heat vision is unable to penetrate the aircraft. Resorting to rougher methods, he easily shrugs off cannon fire and disables the pilots. While delivering the planes back to Metropolis Airport, Superman flies over the spot where he previously crash-landed after the kryptonite engine explosion. Suddenly, he feels dizzy, like his strength is being drained. As he clears the area, the feeling passes. Superman dismisses it as trace effects from the kryptonite radiation in the area. The next morning, Clark learns from Morgan Edge that he's being permanently assigned to WGBS-TV. At the same time as the sun beats on the outline of Superman in the desert, it begins to stir. Ever so slowly, a thing created from soil, rock, and a burst of raw energy cast in the mold of Superman lives. Like some nightmare creature, it plods toward the distant mountains and slowly, relentlessly, to a terrible destiny. And that is Superman number 233.
Now, this one, I first experienced this in a book you'll be familiar with, Superman from the 30s to the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
When I became a comic collector, I received a copy of that issue of that book for my birthday one year. And I probably read through it like four or five times. I loved it. And this is just a standout issue because this is Superman. This is the attempt to put Superman truly into the Bronze Age. Doesn't really stick, but it's the start of some serious or more serious ways of looking at the character and his storyline. So that's why Denny O'Neil, who at this point was, an icon in the industry, having done Batman, having done Batman stories and Green Lantern and Green Arrow stories, and he was, the just the man at the point at that point for DC. And you could see it's an effort to modernize the character and his storyline, making Superman a TV reporter instead of a newspaper reporter, or making Clark Kent that rather. Just this the more serious nature that, we're not going to rely on kryptonite anymore. We're going to basically take away that as one of his weaknesses, and we're going to have to come up with more clever and creative ways to go after this character. So I think you have that, and you also have the art taking a step up. Kurt Swan, I'm sure, was either personally motivated or told you need to really focus on this one and make it, a more sophisticated art style than what you normally do. And Murphy Anderson as the inker, they really brought the A game to this one. This is totally solid, and the story is great, the artwork is great, and this is just a key issue.
It's the first appearance of, I believe, like Morgan Edge and WGBS.
And not to trust Morgan Edge because he uses a cigarette holder.
Him and
Yep.
FDR, two people you couldn't. I'm only kidding.
Well, the Red Skull also uses a cigarette holder. So, a lot of these villains, big with the cigarette holder. So he's not to be trusted. I'm just full of superlatives that I just think this is such a top-notch issue. It's funny, the cover, which I consider to be iconic, and I actually have it in one of those. I don't even know what they call it. It kind of mounted on wood that they were selling at like Hobby Lobby. They had
Right,
the
like a
covers.
plaque,
Yeah, like a
sort
plaque,
of like a
exactly.
plaque.
And I have this as one of them. And I had it hanging up in my old house. I still haven't actually found a place to hang them here. But I had that, and I had another one with a Jack Kirby drawn cover, and I had another one with the John Romita drawn cover, and this is Neil Adams. And I said it's my two favorite art, or my three favorite artists, and I have each one represented by one of these plaque covers. I understand Neil Adams was not happy with the way this came out, and
Really?
I suspect his thought process was that it's too simple, that it should have more going for it. I disagree. I think this is about as iconic as they come as far as comic covers are. So, who am I to argue with Neil Adams? I can't say, but I think, he was not thrilled with this from what I've heard.
The symbolism itself is fantastic. It's telling you the story right on the cover.
Yeah, he's breaking out of kryptonite chains.
So, I mean, you can't hit the nail more on the head than that.
Yeah, the only thing you have is that doesn't occur in the story. But
But it's all right because it's symbolic of what happens in the story.
absolutely. And I love the fact that they try to fool buyers into thinking this is the number one issue. That it's the first, basically that it's a reboot.
I mean, really, the number one is what? 10, 20 times the size of the actual issue number.
Oh yeah. The issue number is, the issue number is the way they normally would put it, but in comparison, it's hidden. Oh, it's the first issue of Superman. But I was always impressed, and I guess, some of that comes from the fact that I read this when I was very young. But I always got a big kick out of when he gives him the kryptonite and he eats it. I don't know why, but that just had like a visceral feeling for me of what it would, what it would be. So, and I just thought it was cool. It's kind of an Otis kind of guy. Oh, they gave me this kryptonite. That's presenting it. So I just again just thought it was really cool. Superman as a report as a TV reporter, or Clark Kent as a TV reporter. I think, that was an effort to modernize the character, and when you consider the fact of what newspaper reporters are today as in comparison to what they were then, it was kind of like, yeah, you did need to do that at some point. You needed to upgrade what he does. I mean, eventually, I think they, in the current days, and you'd know better than me because I don't really follow the current, but I think he has like a blog or something.
He went through that phase, yes. Yeah. I think the planet is all online now.
Yeah, so as I mean, as long as there are reporters, it would be interesting. I mean, I know I'm going far afield here, but it would be interesting to show Clark under pressure, and I don't care which side of the aisle you want it to be, but under pressure to present stories with a leaning towards being more liberal or more conservative,
Right.
and the dilemma he'd have to face with that as far as his personal feelings are. I think that
Working
would be
for the
an
Times or
interesting.
working for the Post?
Well, he could be working for the Daily Planet, but just, yeah, but have to have the editorial staff saying, well, you need to pick a side, Clark, that kind of thing, and him trying to stay fair. I don't think you could have him, actually picking a side so much, but I could see that being an interesting storyline if they, if they present it correctly and fairly.
What's neat is how they predicted the 24-hour news channel about 10 years before there was the 24-hour news channel.
Yeah. I just, I feel like I'm not articulating enough that how much I really, really like this issue.
And again, with the space aspect, to think we're going to be using rockets to send mail across the country just because it's fast.
It's like Amazon.
Yeah.
It's predicting early Amazon.
Federal
I
Express.
got a big kick out of the sand Superman that gets created. And I don't think I've ever picked up, I have, I think, one or two of the issues of that storyline, but I think that's it. I don't think I have the entire storyline. Do you have all of that?
I do. I have. Straight through from the 60s to today, every Superman.
Well, I hate to give spoilers, but how is that resolved?
I haven't read it in a long time, so I can't quite tell you.
Okay,
And
I seem to remember. I have a
I have it
vague
in multiple
recollection.
forms.
I have a vague recollection, and I could be totally wrong on this. And somebody can email us at backtothebins@gmail.com to let us know if I'm wrong. But I seem to have a thought that the sand created Superman actually thinks it's Superman,
Yes, it
and
does.
has a heroic bent to it, and somehow ends up sacrificing itself to save the real Superman.
And it all depowers Superman. He has less, he's temporarily brought down to Earth. You know what I mean? That he's
Yeah.
not as blow out the sun kind of thing.
Well,
But
but
then
that
they
makes
go right
total
back to that.
sense. But that makes total sense if you're going to continue it, because you eliminate kryptonite, so you're eliminating one of the things that you use to defeat him, but let maybe make him just slightly less powerful.
Yeah, and I
I
think
think it
that
makes
was
it
the
easier to
plan,
come up with storylines.
but it doesn't stay.
Well, it didn't stay until Crisis, and then they weakened him again, and then they eventually got him crazy powerful again. Then they did the New 52 and they weakened him again. And it's like a cycle.
See, now the idea of Clark being on TV doesn't seem like the best of plans to hide your secret identity. With more
Especially when you
people looking
disguise as
at
a
you.
pair of glasses
Right.
and the lack of a spit curl.
Right. And imagine wearing a hideous brown suit.
You haven't seen me in my hideous brown suit.
Hey, the 70s was some difficult wardrobe choices. I do
Yeah,
remember that.
Yeah, no question. Well, the 80s had their own bad, bad wardrobe
The
moments.
80s were great.
You know,
There's a great. Sorry, go ahead.
I lived in the 80s, you know, when it came time to finish school and get a job. So, and had to go out and buy suits and everything. So the 80s had their moments too.
There is a great panel on page 12 where the aircraft is firing at Superman and he has the thought bubble. I shouldn't complain. A few cannon shells aren't even a bother. I first saw this and I sent you the link. I had a poster as a kid that my mom bought me, and that image is at the bottom of the poster. And just reading this now is where I realized they took it from. It was a
Interesting.
Laugh Factory poster published in 1977. You
Very
see
cool.
that?
You know, I'm looking for the panel and I'm not seeing. You said page 12?
Page 12, the center one.
Oh, there it is. I see it. Yes.
They cut it down for the poster.
Do they have the whole dialogue on there or just the one bubble?
Just the one bubble. And it's in a
It's a good,
different position.
it's a very good shot, but the artwork in this is excellent. The interesting thing is, and I got used to this, is there is a distinction, and I think it's cool, the way he appears as Clark Kent and the way he appears facially as Superman. Not that he's doing anything really different, but with him with his hair different and his glasses on, they do make him look somewhat different. Now, in the current day and age, I'm sure facial recognition software would not be fooled by such things. But there's enough of a difference in the way he appears that I could see how, at least on a very surfacey level, you wouldn't notice, you know, and say, oh, that guy on TV is Superman. You know what I mean? But people who are close to him certainly would know.
Well, wait, there's a future episode, that episode
Oh, I
issue
know.
that we will
I know
cover
the
at
one you're
some
talking
point.
about.
Yeah, we're not even going to talk about it now.
Where he's using some sort of unconscious super
Super, yeah,
hypnosis.
hypnotism.
Yeah, and that was an interesting one too, though, because I mean, you know, you said we're not going to talk about it, and yet now I'm going to talk about it, because in that they had somebody do a sketch of him, like
Yes.
in the story, somebody drew a sketch, and you see in the sketch he looks older and his hairline is receding slightly
Balding.
more, like somehow that's how that he's perceived, and I
Right.
thought it was a cool thought. It's weird and it's not really, it doesn't really make sense, but just a kind of a cool thought to come up with.
And then he
I think
goes, "No
it's
wonder Lois isn't interested in Clark. My
he
God,
looks like
one
an
leg is shorter than the other."
he looks like an ogre when he's Clark.
We'll put the guy with the hump on his back on TV. But this is a fantastic story. In fact, it's super.
It is, if I was making a list of my top Superman stories of all time, this storyline would be in my top five, no question.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think I have this in at least three, maybe four formats. You know, I have the original book. I have it in the greatest stories. I have a separate hard co cover with the whole Kryptonite and Nevermore story. And I'm pretty sure it's stuck in something else too.
I'm pretty sure that you have Superman from the 30s to the 70s,
Yes, I have that
because I
too.
think I know somebody who sent
I
you that
do have
book.
that. My
Somebody
good
who's
friend there
obviously a
in Long
very good
Island
friend.
sent it to me when I had my knee done.
When you needed
Gentleman
it
and the
most.
scholar that you are.
Yeah, in this storyline, the only issue I have is issue 238. Actually, I have 237. Oh, no, wait, I have 237, 238, 239. No, I'm sorry again. I have 237, 238, 241. So, for what that's worth.
But
I don't even know what this particular issue goes for it currently. I would assume this would be a key expensive issue.
You know what? I happen to have open. What the hell is that? One second here. Let's just get a random idea of what this goes for.
I'm just punching it up on eBay. There's a 9.4 slabbed copy. They're asking for $1,800.
I could get you a deal on it.
Yeah.
I could.
I see one $125. I see one for $94. I see one for $85. I think that is
crazy pricing. Price.
That is pricing as a key issue, because I think issues around this time that aren't this issue probably could be found in the $5 bin or so.
For $4, you could get the facsimile.
Yeah, I'm not interested in any facsimile.
Wow, issue. My comic shop is selling the 9.4 CGC one for $1,485.
Yeah, that's $1,485 that I will not be spending.
I bought mine for under $10 when I bought it.
You probably bought it quite a while ago, though.
I would say the late 90s.
Yeah. You know, if I knew, it's like a lot of my comic collecting. If I knew then what I know now, I would have picked up certain issues that I have not.
Tell me about it.
Not that I wouldn't always have wanted this issue, but for whatever reason, it hadn't stood out to me.
I think we're going to have to take a trip to Kyle's.
I think so. I think we should pick a day to go. So, in the meanwhile, let's rate this one.
This book is very, very easy to rate. The cover, it's so iconic, it's not even funny. And I know, you know, sometimes I throw that around a lot. It's a classic. This is iconic. When they're cranking out posters of this for the last 20, 25 years, that makes it an iconic cover. For me, it is a solid A+. The interior art, I have a soft spot for Kurt Swan. I do like Kurt Swan. This is Kurt Swan at his best, in my opinion. And I'm giving the interior art a solid A-. The story, it sucks you in. It adds new elements combined with classic beats that we've known for years. It upsets the table with Kryptonite being taken out. It plants the seeds of absolute power corrupting absolutely and where this may go. And it's starting to depower Superman while creating something that we don't know what it's going to be. It seems like it's a threat, but we're not sure where it's going to be. For all that, I'm giving the story an A+. This book is a solid A.
Hey, I do not have a lot of variation on your thoughts here. I think this cover is one of the best covers ever, despite Neil Adams' self-deprecating thoughts about it. I'm saying it's a solid A+ for exactly the reasons that you said. The artwork in the story, I differ from you only in that I'm giving it an A, not an A-. I think this is as good as Kurt Swan has ever been. I don't think you're ever going to find an issue where Kurt Swan does better. I think this is amazing. I think it's great. I think it's a solid A. I look at it and I wonder why it wasn't always this good. And Kurt Swan is my, I don't think, you know, there's, I've given the distinction between the best artist and the artist that you relate most quickly. Kurt Swan isn't the best artist to do Superman by any question, but he's the first one I think of because he's the one who was doing Superman as I was growing up.
Yeah.
So Kurt Swan is kind of my Superman artist, and this is as good as I've ever seen his work. So it's an A. And I agree with you, the story just gives so many things. It's finally trying to mature Superman stories and bring it to another level. It's an A plus. So I'm giving the book an A plus. I think this is just a great book.
Excellent.
So that's it for our score episode on Superman. But stay tuned and there'll be more Superman coming your way down the line. In the meanwhile, thank you everybody for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye bye.
Bye-bye. And remember, look up in the sky.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiMonzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.
I'm just looking in the book, they have the like a poster page where it says, "A new year brings a new beginning for Superman, 1971.
Who knew I would be arriving that year, right?
That's what created the new era.
That's right.